So I'm going to be presenting today the first part of some research that we're looking at the relationship between informal care and employment. And those of you who were at the plenary session this morning would have heard some discussion of the research in this area. And we're just focusing on one aspect of that and focusing on the UK. So this is work done with my colleagues Linda Pickard, Nicola Grimblecombe, and Martin Knapp here at the LSE, and is funded by the National Institute for Health Research School for Social Care Research. So we're interested in unpaid care and employment, and this has become a key policy issue in the UK, with a number of recent UK government policy documents referring to the importance of providing support for unpaid carers and their willingness to remain in employment. So the Care Strategy 2010, the government white paper in 2012, and the Supporting Carers paper in 2013 have all made reference to this issue. A lot of the discussion around the policy context for this has been around encouraging people who provide care to have flexible work conditions. But what we're more interested in is looking at replacement care that allows people to remain in work. So not necessarily looking at only flexible working conditions, but other aspects of supports for individuals that will allow them to remain in employment. And this is referred specifically in the 2010 care strategy also, where there's a discussion of the need for the development of social care markets, partly to meet carers' needs for replacement care to enable them to continue in work. The Care Act that was passed into Parliament in May of this year in the UK makes clear the need for councils to provide carers with an assessment, so individual assessments for carers to identify their needs separate from those of the care recipient. And part of that will be questions around whether or not the carer would like to remain in employment and what supports they would need to allow them to do that. So as we heard in the plenary session this morning, there are some gaps still in the research in this area. A lot of the focus on replacement care, the evidence has come from the US and maybe other parts of Europe, and not necessarily reflecting some of the information that we have in terms of evidence from the UK, which in terms of we decide that is what is needed. And as we heard, some of that evidence isn't necessarily applicable to the UK because of differences in terms of the social care system and also in terms of labour market conditions. So the objective today is to look at evidence for the support for replacement care. And here we're talking about replacement care being formal services, be they private or public, to support carers to remain in employment. So briefly going through the methods, results, and some conclusions. So in terms of the methods, we used data from the 2009-2010 Personal Social Services Survey of Adult Carers in England, which I'll just refer to as PSSSACE because that's a lot easier. And the aim was, to look at the association between employment rates. We looked at whether or not an individual was or was not in employment based on their current receipt of social care, the current receipt of social care by the cared for person. So we're just looking at cross-sectional analysis at the moment. We focused obviously on those individuals who are still in the labor market, so women under the age of 60 and under the age of 65 at the time of the survey. Separate analysis was done for women and men, and we also then focused on carers providing more than 10 hours of care. We identified in some previous work that we had done that above 10 hours of care is the point at which you start to see large numbers of carers leaving the labor market. So a bit about the survey. This is a survey of carers known to local authorities. So that is carers who were identified within local authorities as being providers of informal care based on the individual that they care for having had an assessment, or them themselves being in contact with regards to finding out about services through the local authority. The carers were all of age 18 or over, as well as looking after people age 18 or over, so looking after adults only included. The survey was voluntary, and 90 councils took part, which represented 59% of the sample. Analysis that by the NHS Information Centre does suggest that this sample was representative of councils in general across the UK. We had responses from 35,000 individuals in the survey, which represents a 40% response rate. In addition to looking at whether or not individuals benefited from receipt of services, we also wanted to look at what services tended to be associated with informal carers remaining in employment. So we looked at individual services, and those that are included in the survey are use of care homes, personal assistance, home care, daycare, lunch club, and Meals on Wheels. So just briefly looking at the demographics of the sample, as you would expect, majority women. The final column here is a sample that we're looking at. So we have roughly 10,500 individuals included who are under state pension age and caring for more than 10 hours a week. Of these, we can see 46% of women and 38% of men who are still in employment. This slide shows the distribution of the numbers within the sample receiving any number of individual services and also combinations of services. I should start by saying that of the sample that we, in terms of our analysis, roughly 30% were looking after someone who was not receiving any formal services, so they were solely receiving informal care. So amongst the 70% who are receiving both formal and informal services, we see that the most commonly reported services received are home care and daycare, and then combinations thereof. So, as I say, we wanted to look at whether or not an individual was in employment, very basically just looking at a logistic regression and cross-sectional analysis. We included a number of other factors, covariates, which we thought, based on the literature, would have an impact potentially on whether or not they were in employment. And as I say, we initially looked at whether or not an individual, the service recipient, was receiving one or more services versus no services, and then looked at the most commonly received services, both individually and in combinations of. So firstly, an analysis of female carers under state pension age providing care for 10 or more hours a week. We can see a significant association in terms of increased likelihood of being in employment if they receive one or more services. Similar result for men, again in the direction that we would expect. So moving on then to look at individual services and combinations of services. So here we wanted to look at what information can we gain from the data in terms of what are the services that are most beneficial for people in terms of remaining in employment. And we can see that a receipt of home care and personal assistance seem to be important services in terms of allowing carers to remain in employment. Some results were significant for women, for example, and not men, so things like the combination of daycare and personal assistance and the receipt of Meals on Wheels. The daycare is interesting in that we, based on the fact that individuals are remaining in employment while they're looking after someone and providing 10 hours a week, we can be fairly confident that this refers to respite care, so individuals receiving occasional respite with the cared for person going into a care home. So just summarizing some of this, there's a positive association between carers' employment and receipt of social care services by the cared for person in the direction that we would expect, where that the cared for person receiving services allows the carer to be more likely to be in employment. We see specific services that seem to be associated with employment rates for both men and women in carers in home care and personal assistance. Daycare, Meals on Wheels significant for women, but not necessarily for men. And care homes, not significant on its own, but significant when combined with other services. So thinking about taking this forward, we can identify some of these relationships that we have observed. One of the things that we are going on to do is to look at some longitudinal data that has been collected, that we're hoping to collect. So my colleagues have done an initial survey of individuals who are reported as being carers working in primarily in the public sector in different parts of the UK. And so we have initial data from them that we're analyzing at the moment and hoping that we can re-interview those people, both in terms of answering questions around receipt of services, but also conducting a qualitative interview with a subset of those individuals to get a better sense of these relationships that we're looking at a very basic level here. So I guess the thing to say is to watch the space, and hopefully maybe if you're back at the conference in 2 years' time, I'll have some more sophisticated models to show you in terms of some of those results that hopefully will shed more light on the relationship that we're looking at here. Just to think about some of the policy implications of some of this work. In terms of replacement care, we have quite often been told that it's not necessarily a very constructive way of describing the care that care recipients receive in addition to their own informal caring. We only use that term because it's what's used in the literature, and we couldn't actually think of anything that was more positively reflective of what we were referring to. So we are aware of that. And I think also bearing in mind particularly the aspect of this is that the majority of these people are actually not receiving, the cared for person is not receiving services then to replace the informal care. We're looking predominantly and almost exclusively at people who are receiving some support. And it's not replacing informal care, it's supplementing and complementing the care that they're receiving. We wanted to show this association. Obviously, it then leads on, and the results are necessary in order to justify some of the work that we will go on to do, to look at and some of the longitudinal data. And then finally, to think about some of the cost of replacement care. As I say, we're looking here at both formal and informal care. Private and publicly provided formal services. And typically, if we're thinking about the types of services that we're looking at in terms of home care, personal assistance, but also thinking about the environment of formal care in the UK, which Valentina spoke about, in terms of the way that's being rationed, we are looking at a situation where we are primarily looking at privately provided or privately purchased formal care. And so we think that there is evidence here to support the public provision of more formal services based on the fact that it will have some benefits to the public sector in terms of savings that can accrue through people remaining in employment, so things like tax revenues and reductions in benefits for carers. Thank you very much.